You're listening to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast, where we look to inform about our upcoming events and give insight to behind-the-scenes happenings at the RSO.
Welcome to today's episode of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast. I'm Margot Stedman, Education and Community Engagement Director, and your host for today's podcast. And I'm here with our music director, Yaniv Attar. Hi, Yaniv.
Hi, Margot. Good to be here.
And today we're going to talk a little bit about our April concert, The French Connection. So this one's exciting. There's a lot going on that week. We were just chatting before we turned on the record button on everything that's going on around this program and about this program. And now I'm just super excited to talk about it and share it with our audience, everything that I know and more. So there's three pieces on this program, and I thought maybe we would just talk about each piece, talk about the French Connection, and see where it goes from there.
Sure.
So the first piece on the program is pretty well known. Debussy, I'm not going to embarrass myself with French. We'll just say
Prélude à l'après-midi d'enfant.
Beautifully done. Thank you. For those that don't speak French, Prélude to the Afternoon of a Fawn. This was based on a poem, I know, by a French symbolist poet, which I did a little bit of reading and learned that that's kind of like the writing version of Impressionism.
Right.
Of a satyr, which always makes me think of Narnia, because that's what...
Right.
Right. I think of Narnia with that. So it's like the man goat, which I do. That is very romantic, the image of. So we start with poetry. What's going on here with this?
So it was natural to choose this piece for this program because of the French Connection title. And I think it's also connected to the concert that we just did in February, which was all inspired by either poems or composers who were inspired by words. And actually, this is the only piece on the program that is really French. But this piece is really important in the history of music because of the musical language that Debussy uses it. Many people say that this was, you know, it opens with a solo flute, very famous solo flute. And I forget, I think it was Pierre Boulez, a very important 20th century composer and conductor, who said that the breath of the flute in those first few notes was what opened the doors to modern music.
Wow.
And yes, it was inspired by this poem by Stéphane Mallarmé. It's actually a music for ballet that Debussy wrote.
Oh.
So it was choreographed. Funny story is that actually Mallarmé was quite upset when he heard that his poem was an inspiration to Debussy for music, and he refused to even hear it. And then he got an invitation from Debussy himself to come hear the premiere. Debussy kind of twisted his arm. He came and was so moved by how the music was not only so descriptive of what was going on in the poem, I mean, to an incredible amount of details of which timing of the music corresponds with timing of what's happening in the poem. And later he wrote to Debussy and said how he changed his mind totally. And he ended up with like, "I shake your hand, Debussy, for the wonderful job you have done." But really, the doors to modern music, especially with Impressionism, this was 1890s?
1894.
1894. So it's pretty early when you think of, you know, Mahler symphonies were written in a more of a German tradition. And here we are going in a completely different way with the Impressionistic movement. But yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful work. I'm really excited. Every time I do it with an orchestra, it's exciting for everybody.
And I just think listening to you talk, thinking about being an audience member and hearing something like this for the first time that now is very familiar to our ears.
Right.
The sound of Debussy and Impressionism. It's something that if you listen to a lot of classical music, you might not know what the pieces are, but you've heard it on the radio. You've heard it. It doesn't sound as foreign to us anymore. It still sounds special and different. But the idea that something new that we consume today could become the Debussy of the future, and how this isn't a podcast about new music, but the importance of bringing work to life.
And you know, I don't necessarily try to do this when I program over a season, But I like when it actually happens because we have the connection a little bit of the previous concert in February, which is, you know, poetry and music set to it. And we're looking ahead to our May program, and we're presenting our major work is one of the most incredible impressionistic works in the history of music, The Sea, La Mer, by Debussy. So it's like every program kind of connects us to what we heard and what we're about to hear. It's just nice when it happens.
No better endorsement to become a subscriber than that.
There you go.
Okay, so then the next piece on the program is by Piazzolla. It's a concerto for bandoneon.
Very good.
Well, when Javier in our office says it, it sounds...
Bandoneon.
Yeah, you all say it much better than I do. I sound very American. That's okay. I'll own that and still enjoy it. But it's a concerto. So there's a lot... I feel like there's a lot of like different pieces we need to unpack there. There's like, what is a bandoneon?
Right.
What do we need to know about this piece? What do we need to know about Piazzolla? What do we need to know about Hector? Where do we want to start? There's just, it's exciting.
Well, because bandoneon is not an instrument you first hear much, and especially not with a symphony orchestra, I like to call it the baby accordion, because that's what it looks like, basically. And I was actually surprised when Hector, when I met with him, because we worked a lot together, he explained to me how this instrument works.
Oh,
I mean, it started in Germany, but it wasn't very popular because of the difficulty. The mechanics of it are so confusing. When you think of accordion, it's quite different the way it works with, like, it's very similar to piano.
Yeah, you know? There's a keyboard on it.
It's so different with the bandoneon. You only have those, I don't know, buttons.
Little buttons, yeah.
But they work in the most unfriendly, how do you call it in America? Not very user-friendly.
It's not, yeah. Well, my husband got a little mini concertina for Christmas this year, so we've been on a little journey in our home. And he said, like, on one hand, it's some keys, and on the other, it's the other keys, and they don't
I don't know how to wrap my head around it. But for that reason, it didn't become very popular in Europe. But it was because of, you know, it's not an expensive instrument per se. It had quite a successful renaissance or rebirth in Argentina, and you know, it's very portable because it's so small.
It really connects the both halves of your brain together,
right?
To play it, yeah.
And it became a really popular dance tango music. So Astor Piazzolla, Argentinian composer, an incredible virtuoso on the bandoneon, very serious composer. He studied in France with Nadia Boulanger.
This is the French connection.
Here's the French connection. And you know, at that time, if you wanted to be a serious composer, you had to go through Nadia Boulanger in Paris, which he did. And that kind of training, I think, enabled him to introduce tango music and incorporate it with symphonic music. He's really one of the only, if not the only, composer who did that in a very serious way, which is exciting. I mean, I, as a classical guitarist, came to know a lot of Piazzolla's music because there's a lot of guitar music written by him. And he's not called the king of tango for nothing. I mean, lots of parts of this concerto, you can imagine yourself in Paris in the early 1920s. The music is so charming. And one of the challenges, I think, that I had learning this concerto is, you know, when I learn a concerto, I learn the orchestra part, and then I have to learn the soloist part very well, because I need to know where are the twists and turns that the soloist is going to take, you know, so I can follow them and accompany them well. Well, a lot of the music here is totally improvised.
Oh, wow.
So I only need to provide our soloist, Hector, with kind of a frame of where he can play with, but I don't really know what he's going to do. So that keeps me on edge the whole time. but it's part of the thing that makes it so exciting, because every performance is going to be totally different.
Right. Which is why you have to be there live.
Right. But it's scored for strings, percussion, harp, and piano.
Interesting.
Very cool sounding kind of an ensemble. It's such a fun concerto. I think the audience is going to have a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I was just thinking, yeah, of course, because the bandoneon is, I mean, it's not a wind instrument, but it's making noise with air. So kind of filling in those parts. That's really, really cool. I'm excited about that. And then the second half, I won't say the biggest piece, but a favorite for sure. We're doing Pictures at an Exhibition, which is, I love it. Who doesn't love it?
It's one of the cornerstones of classical music, for sure.
A masterwork, even. Right. On a masterworks concert. Definitely. So I think people love this piece. And it was originally written for piano by Mussorgsky. They were doing Ravel's orchestration, so there's our French connection.
Right.
But you were telling me a little bit about orchestrations before. I think others would love to hear that.
Funny enough, it took Mussorgsky a little less than 3 weeks to write the piece for piano.
Wow.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah.
A very short amount of time. The thing with this piece that is so interesting, and I don't know if that Mussorgsky had that in mind, but because of the nature of the piece, there's 10 different pictures that it describes, and they're all connected by a common promenade, you know, walking through the art gallery, through those paintings, and each of the pieces describes very vividly the painting that you're about to see. But because they're so different in character and stuff, the piece screams for orchestrations more than any other piece that I can think of in classical music. And for that reason, so many composers were attracted to orchestrate this piece. There are more than 50 different orchestrations for Pictures. Funny story about this, at the time when it was composed, orchestrated, one of the famous orchestration was by Sir Henry Wood. And then once he heard the Ravel's orchestration, he pulled out his music from any public access because he said, that's it. Ravel just did it.
He did it. Yeah.
I've heard a lot of the orchestrations. No one come close to Ravel. And now it's so tattooed in our ears and our brains that it's impossible not to compare each one of them to another one. I'm actually doing one in a couple of weeks with a chamber orchestra. So it's a much smaller orchestration, and I cannot take the Ravel out of my mind.
Right.
The Ravel is the one, and the French Connection, he is the master of orchestrations. Just nobody can do it better than him.
Is the piano part ever performed?
Yes, it's a very standard piece.
Is it?
But you know, what's interesting about this piece is that it's not just an orchestration. There's a really interesting storytelling that Ravel does that goes beyond what Mussorgsky was able to do with piano. I'll give you an example. There's one movement, the ox cart, the ox carrying the cart. And in the piano version, it's fortissimo from the beginning. You are looking at the painting right at the bullseye. I mean, you really see it right there. What Ravel does, he starts the movement very, very softly, with strings muted, and it really sounds like it's from far away, gets louder and louder through the movement, and then fades away. So you have the illusion of that ox pulling that heavy cart, seeing it from far away until it passes you right by your eyes, and then it fades away.
The movement.
Yeah. And to create a moving painting through music, that's something that even paintings can't do.
Unless you're in Harry Potter.
Right. So I think these kind of imaginative things are so much fun to listen to as you have this interactive experience of moving art.
So I'm going to dovetail off that because we're doing this piece for our youth concert.
Yes,
And a lot of our conversations, we've talked about that, like sharing with the students that come how a musician, and in this case, Ravel is the orchestrator, uses different tools, art tools, to paint these pictures. And
right.
So I'm really excited to share that with the students. I think it's going to be, not only is the music beautiful, but I think it's empowering to think about that you have all these tools that you can use to express yourself. And even if you're just writing a song in the shower, you can do it.
It's easy when you're trying to imagine a painter and they have this color to do this or that. But when you talk to young kids, like, how do you they can hear the music, they can maybe hear the effect, but how is this painting something?
Mm-hmm.
What is the effect that this sound makes, that this color make, that using this part of the bow, that using this mute, all these things that composers have at their disposal, how are they helpful in creating that painting that they're trying to paint?
Right.
And, you know, once, not just kids, anybody understands that.
Yeah.
Then understanding of music is jumping to a completely different level.
Yeah, definitely. I've been in concerts with friends' kids before and things, and you get a little squirmy. And I always lean over and say, close your eyes and pretend you're watching a movie. What do you see?
Yes.
And I mean, the stories they come out with, you're like, wow, did not see that coming. But I think it's a good exercise for all of us. Tap into your inner child. And whether it's a programmatic piece and meant to tell a story or not, what's it telling you? And that's a really cool thing about music. And I think that's the cool thing about live music is that everyone's experiencing that together. And then when you leave a concert, you can all discuss what you got out of it.
But I totally agree with you. And I think it's not, it shouldn't be an age thing. I think every music has a story.
Absolutely.
And if it's not, make a story.
Yeah.
Because the composer had some kind of imaginary story in their head. And if that's what helps us connect to music and in a certain way, we have to use it.
Yeah, and each other.
Right, right.
Well, and a really cool part about this whole program is that we're going to be able to open it to the community in a way we've never done before.
Absolutely. So there's the dress rehearsal on Thursday. Help me with the date.
April 11th.
April 11th at 1 o'clock at the Coronado. We will have the dress rehearsal. Many people ask me, I mean, throughout the years in every orchestra, they're curious about what's happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. They come to the concert, they know what's happening.
Sure.
You come and we perform. But what actually happens during the rehearsal? What does the conductor do?
Mm-hmm.
How does he or she interact with the soloists and the orchestra with the soloists and with the conductor, and what kind of decisions are happening in order to make the concert a success? This is going to be a wonderful opportunity. You can come to the open dress rehearsal, and I think you have to register online.
Yeah, it's free.
It's free. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for the audience to come and maybe you won't hear things as you would hear in performance,
mm-hmm.
But it might give you a teaser of why you should come to the concert, because obviously it's a totally different experience. It's different adrenaline for the audience, mm-hmm. and for the musicians. But I think I always heard how much people love coming to rehearsals and seeing the process of getting from A to B,
mm-hmm.
During a very short period of time.
And I think the other exciting part, not just that the content's different, but that we're able to do it in an afternoon. So people that have other things going on during our concert times or whatever the barriers are, it's just offering a different slice of
right.
opportunity for them to come to the Coronado to see the
absolutely
to see the symphony. And we're really grateful to the Rockford Area Arts Council for a grant that they provided to help make this possible, to open this up free. It's going to be really cool.
It's awesome. Go to the website, register, and come experience music in a different way.
And then buy tickets and come back for the concert.
Absolutely.
Well, is there any other tidbits that we need to know as we're getting excited to come to this?
I think there's so much variety in this concert. There's the known, like pictures, but there's the fun, exciting Piazzolla, which I'm telling you, you are going to love it. When I heard this piece for the first time, it makes you want to jump out of your seat and dance. Even if you know, and I'm not
yeah.
a dancer. You can ask my wife. I'm a terrible dancer. But it's really a fun program, family friendly. I think you're going to love it. Go get tickets. You're not going to regret it.
All right. On that note, we hope that you're joining us. The concert is Saturday, April 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. All the information is available on the symphony's website, and we'll see you there. Thanks, Yaniv.
Thanks, Margot.